All right, welcome back to Liquid Gold. Mike, why don't you go for it?
All right, where the rum flows downhill and the truth is untold. Welcome to Liquid Gold.
That's a good one.
We are excited. We're back here at the We Own This Town studios, presented by We Own This Town. Thank you so much to Michael Eads, our producer, and to Taylor over here from Best Brands for bringing our friend and the administrator slash president slash chancellor of rum. Mr. Ed Hamilton is here, and we are super excited. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, this is awesome. We've got a lot of rum to taste here. Hope you enjoyed our shots episode where we talked about the tea punch. So do check that out. We are at @liquidgold_pod on Instagram. My name's Mike Wolf. Super stoked to be here today in the middle of staining a countertop and getting bloody and getting my hands dirty, along with my co-host, Mr. Kenneth Dedman over here. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, Mike.
We're getting this day started off well.
Adversity as well today.
Yeah.
NES just decided to shut off the power to half the city last night. I was trying to charge my phone. I don't know, like, watch Harry Potter.
Yeah, you're worried about your alarm.
Get ready for the show. Yeah. I told you I'd oversleep, but I didn't.
You didn't. You made it. So this is great. So Ed Hamilton is here with his rums. He's got all these beautiful rums from Jamaica, from Guyana, from Martinique. And we're going to talk about all these different styles of rum. I think one of the things that's really interesting about the rums that bear your name now, you have these different flavor profiles, different regions, where it seems like rum, obviously similar to wine, but also similar to how whiskey is sort of becoming, where you're more tasting a place now. With rum, it's even more so. You are tasting a region, you're tasting a place. What drew you to these to kind of express these different styles of rum?
Well, I had no intention of doing my own brand. Having brought in Rum Agricole for almost 10 years, bartenders came to me and said, for example, Ed, we've got to have a black Jamaican rum with character. And I took it upon myself to go down to Jamaica. I was able to visit a few distilleries. Fortunately, they were opening the door for me, so to speak. They knew who I was. So when I came and said I wanted to buy rum of a certain profile, they said, oh, okay, yeah. Or they said, no, we're not selling you rum because that's not what we do.
Yeah.
I said, okay. But I was able to work with the Worthy Park Distillery in Jamaica, which is a fantastic place right in the middle of the island. It was originally a land grant for Colonel Price that was credited with resisting and beating back the Spanish invasion back in the 1600s and keeping Jamaican English. But this distillery estate today produces their own rum, but they grow their own sugar cane, they make their own sugar, they make their own molasses, and then they make their own rum. So I was responding to the bartender community. You guys got the email or maybe the text that Tiki is back.
Yeah.
So 10 years ago, people were coming to me and saying, Ed, we need this Jamaican rum. Go find it, please. We need it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to do that. And so I responded to market demand.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the black rum, and the first bartender to taste it said, Ed, this is great, but it doesn't look so nice in a daiquiri and a champagne coupe. Looks like somebody shit in the glass.
Yeah, put it in a coupe. Looks like poop.
So bring it to us in a gold. So I did a gold, which was just a different caramel.
Mm-hmm.
But in that process, I met the Sethness family, who owns the biggest caramel company in America, probably in the world, definitely in the world. And learned more about caramel coloring and all these things work and how it affects the flavor and taste of a rum. And the Demerara rums, I was the importer of Lemon Heart. That went away for a while. There was a demand. I had to fill it. And so I started doing my Demerara rums. And then people came to me and said, we need a Navy Strength rum with character.
Mm-hmm.
So I blended the Jamaican and the Demerara, and then I have a Navy Strength, 114 proof Navy Strength. People didn't want to just blend the 151 and the 93 proof Jamaican. they didn't trust their bar backs to do it properly.
Right, right.
So I ended up blending, and because I was blending those two rums, I had the opportunity to change the proportions of the blend, and it ended up being 60% Demerara, 40% Jamaican, which turned out to be a much better blend than if I had just done the normal 1 ounce of Jamaican and 0.5 ounces of Demerara.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should hit that.
Yeah, the Demerara.
I'd like to like give you props.
Or the Navy Strength. Do you have the Navy Strength over there?
I do have the Navy
Cool.
Strength.
Cool. And I think that one thing I can add on top of that, with the Jamaican black style, with the black rum, why would a bartender ask you for that? Why would a bartender inquire about that? Well, it's because it has all these funky kind of tropical flavors that give a really nice punctuating note on top of citrus juice, maybe passion fruit, all these tropical flavors that you want to add in a tropical cocktail. And these rums really hold up to that. I've definitely experienced the black rum in a tropical drink, and it does wonders to kind of hold up to some big flavors.
Gotta give you props, Ed, on the actual, like, paying tribute to Demerara and what it actually is, because a lot of bartenders don't know what Demerara is. And to educate all of us dumb fucks out here, the Demerara is a reference to the Demerara River in Guyana.
Right. It's a region in Guyana. And when I started looking for my own 151, I went to a lot of different distilleries. And I have to congratulate the people at the other distilleries. They said, Ed, if you're trying to replace Lemon Heart 151, we don't have the flavor profile of that Demerara rum. I said, okay, but I wanted to ask. And I don't want you coming back to me later and saying, hey, we could do that. Well, they can't. And the flavor of the Demerara rums is a function of their raw material, their molasses, the sugar content in their molasses, their yeast, and also their stills. They have the last operating wooden pot stills and wooden column stills. And they also have continuous stills that produce much lighter rum, but then they're blended. And they add a little bit of caramel to the barrels before they age, so it gives a little bit of a red tint. But when you taste a Demerara rum, you will know it. Now, along those lines, so they also make some very light rums. They make some rums that you would not identify as Demerara rums. They also make a vodka. The distillery, Demerara Distillers Limited, makes a vodka, mostly sold in the local market. And then they flavor it and make a gin, which we all know is just flavored vodka anyway.
Right.
The original.
Are they drinking that down there? The vodka and the gin?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the least expensive vodka and gin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Guyana is not a particularly rich country. The people are not particularly rich. I mean, it's a tremendous natural resources. But it's very difficult to mine the gold and the other resources that are there.
I'm sure that oil is probably pretty big there.
There is oil off the coast, and but again, they're right next to Trinidad. Trinidad has the infrastructure to extract the oil. Trinidad also has asphalt pits, and almost every state has some asphalt from Guyana. Or from Trinidad, excuse me.
Wow. So one thing I've always wanted to ask you, I guess, because I don't know if this is just my brain playing tricks on me when I drink a rum that has been distilled in a wooden column still. What flavors does that impart? Does it impart kind of a robust character to the rum, or do I just imagine that?
I think it's a little combination of both. It's the pot still. And the pot still gives you a lot of heavier flavors than we get from a column still. The dark fruit, the spice, a lot of people call it stone fruit, cooked, like baked blueberries, baked prunes, those heavier flavors. And that's a combination of the fermentation and the pot still. Like the pot still Jamaican rum, it's a similar pot still. It's not the same pot still, but it's also a different fermentation, different yeast. Mm. But we get a lot of the overripe banana flavors, heavier flavors. The column still rums tend to give you lighter things, light fruit flavors, passion fruit, light tropical fruits and the floral notes that we get. And the Demerara rums typically lack light florals.
When you're distilling out of wood, I would assume you're distilling at a lower temperature than you would out of a copper or stainless steel. And what is that doing to the flavors as far as just the distillation out of wood in comparison?
Yeah, I can't speak exactly or precisely to the temperature. There is steam coming up through the wood, but I believe you're right. You're working with lower temperatures, so you're going to get heavier flavors than you would with higher temperatures. The higher temperatures, you're going to volatilize different things.
I would theorize that distilling temperatures across the board doesn't vary too much, because there is one specific temperature that you have to hit to distill a consumable product of ethanol. So it may not necessarily be temperature, but more like a texture thing, or it's just an old dope piece of wood that that just won't quit. I know for a fact, like, what Buffalo Trace does is run everything through a doubler, then through a pot, to further clarify it. So
from like a heat source, would the wood catch on fire if you were going
the heat source is steam.
451 degrees to get wood to burn.
Right, but we're only working with steam.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And I think
It's cool shit.
One thing that you touched on with the tasting notes of the Jamaican rum and also the rums from Guyana, you're talking overripe bananas with a lot of the Jamaican style rums. You're talking overriped and stewed, maybe left out on the counter a few days, blueberries, stone fruit, stuff like that, which lends itself to spice. If you're a pastry chef and you have a bunch of overripe bananas, you're probably going to make banana bread. You might add a little cinnamon. That's why these rums are so great in these tropical style and tiki drinks, which we've talked about kind of the last few episodes. So that's really interesting that this is all making sense. It all works.
Yeah, a lot of, everything I've done has just been filling a need. Mm-hmm. I didn't sit around on my boat and drink a bunch of rum and say, hey, I'm going to do my own rum. This is going to be a really cool thing. I brought the agricoles to America originally back in 2005 because there wasn't any. Nobody else was doing it. It turned out that Clément was coming in the same time I was, but they pretty much started on the East Coast. I started on the West Coast, and I was fortunate. California really took quickly to Nissan La Favorite rums, and I explored that and then grew around the country. But call it the path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. I didn't set out to come up with a rum brand and a rum profile and introduce something and say, oh, I've got a better rum than your other rum.
Mm-hmm. This is something people wanted.
This is something people asked me for.
Yeah.
The Navy Strength was something they asked me for. I've got another rum here, West Indies 1670 blend, which was asked for by the people at PRA in New York. They also have Dead Rabbit. They asked me for
Sean Muldoon.
You know, mm-hmm. Sean. So you'll appreciate this. Sean's a big guy.
I could whoop him.
You just hand that over here. Okay. They asked me for a rum for daiquiris. And as you guys know, as bartenders, I said, wow, daiquiri, that's a big word. What do you want? Because I make daiquiris at home with Nissan Blanc. I make it with La Favorite. I make it with other things. And that day, all I had with me was a bottle of this Navy Strength. And they made a couple of daiquiris with it, 2-ounce daiquiris, and said, Ed, that's perfect. Well, I know better than perfect. I said, yeah, but that's 114 proof. You can't be serving daiquiris to little old ladies that come down to the pier to have a daiquiri with their fish and chips on the pier. I mean, it's a beautiful place, beautiful scene. You can see the Statue of Liberty, but you know, don't you want these people to have 2 daiquiris and uh-huh. not instead of one? Uh-huh. And they go, yeah. And I said, well, the problem here is you guys are professional alcoholics. And I'm a pretty good-sized guy, but all of these guys are much bigger than I am mm-hmm. and much more seasoned to large drinks. So we ended up, down to 84 proof. And I did another blend of the Jamaican and the Demerara rums at 84 proof. It was originally called New York Blend. Now that's only sold in New York. But in homage to the Demerara distillers and the people at Worthy Park, Both of those distilleries trace their history back to 1670. So I have a West Indies 1670 blend.
I've never tried this, so this is the first on liquid gold. First time I've tried it.
This is fucking insane, bro. Yeah, shout out to Sean and Jack.
Yeah, wow. They're great guys. And the rum is doing okay in New York, but not everybody loves New York. And I knew that going into this project, but Texas asked me and other people asked me. Interesting to me, I waited a couple of years to rebrand this as West Indies 1670 because people like Marie at Tonga Hut said, oh, great, New York blend. I don't have to explain where the West Indies are to people in California. People in California can name and spell every island in the Hawaiian island chain, but they don't know where the West Indies are.
Mm. So when the rums, especially the agricole, I'm interested in that, when it was taking hold in California, how was it? How are people drinking it? Were they drinking cocktails with it? Was it a cocktail bar thing?
Yeah, it was cocktail bars. Yeah. They were doing not as much tea punch as I thought they would, but they were doing a lot of swizzles, a lot of things. And one thing I was able to pick up very early on, do not tell bartenders how to make a drink.
Yeah.
I said, here's a tea punch. I'm not a bartender. I don't play one on the internet. Here's how we drink it in Martinique, but you're welcome to do whatever you want to do with it.
Yeah.
And they came up with all kinds of great things.
I always thought if you're going to tell a bartender how to make a drink, do it in sign language.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Shut up.
Yeah, I saw.
Well, we need help too.
I watched a lot of other brands, and back in 2005, there were a lot of the cocktail. Called the cocktail revolution. There were a lot of brands coming to the market and everybody had their signature cocktails. And you guys are bartenders. When somebody comes in with a signature cocktail list, what's the first thing you do with that list?
Burn it? I don't know.
You glance
grab
over
the torch.
Yeah, glance over it to see if there's any products in that list that you hate or love. And then kind of move on from there.
Mm-hmm.
You taste it, and you say, "Yeah, I've got a drink now, and maybe this would be a better substitute for what the other product that I'm using." But rarely have I seen a bartender go, "Oh wow, a traditional Martinique signature cocktail! I've got to put that on my cocktail list."
Yeah. So I met you. This must have been about 7 years ago or so. At the Holland House in East Nashville, we were very into kind of that next wave of tiki, the resurgence. We were making tiki drinks. We had a palm tree on the menu. We had a blender station in the back, which was hilarious. So if you were sitting at the front bar and you said, "I'll take that Missionary Downfall that's on there," we'd say, "Oh, Missionary Downfall." And then we get passed down, Missionary Downfall, get passed to the back of the room. Somebody would walk back to the blender and then they'd say, it'll be about 15 minutes. And it was kind of hilarious. But when you came in to do a tasting with us. And I'll never forget one thing that you said. Well, a lot of things, but the one thing that really stuck out, because we were making, everybody had their version of the daiquiri, and that was like, oh, I like to do a little tiki bitters, maybe a little Smith and Cross, a touch of grapefruit juice, a little spice here. And I remember somebody talking about Smith and Cross, and you said, Smith and Cross, that shit will kill you.
Did I say that? Generally, I'm
it's quoted, strong. It's strong.
Generally, I'm quoted as saying it's unfit for human consumption. So there's an example of a product that was not designed. Well, the Wedderburn and Plummer rums were not designed, not distilled in Jamaica to be consumed straight. They don't drink them that way in Jamaica. There's a little bit of history in the making on this, because initially the label said it was made at Hamden Estate in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. But now Eric Seed and Jake Parrott are saying, no, we never said that. The Hamden Distillery is a fantastic historical place, but using wooden fermentation vats accumulates decades of all kinds of insect and animal larvae and decomposing bits in the bottom of the tank. Mm. They say, we never clean it. We can't. There's no drain in the bottom. We just siphon out from the top and down to a few inches and then fill it up again. Mm. There's something inherently wrong with that.
Yeah.
And the product that Hamden used to make, now things have changed there a lot recently, but before they started making Rumfire, they made a high ester rum. And when I was there, they wouldn't let me taste it. They said, no, man, that's not for drinking. That's for blending. Mm. So these heavy rums, and I was just in Miami a couple months ago, talking to people from Rums of Jamaica. And they said, no, we don't drink these rums, these high ester rums. They're not designed for drinking. They're designed for blending. But Eric thought it would be great. And I applaud him for pushing the pendulum as far as he did. But what I'm seeing is people are starting to investigate a little more and saying, you know, I've had a couple of bad nights with that, and or bad mornings, great yeah. nights, bad mornings.
Yeah, I have too.
Mm. What's going on with that? I go, well, you know, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, and I'm not trying to destroy the guy's brand, but he had never been to Jamaica and visited the distilleries where it's actually made and seen how it was made. And as you guys know, with whiskey or craft distilling in general, or beer or any alcohol, just because it comes out of a still does not mean you should drink it.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of times it needs time. It needs some filtration. It needs
or redistillation.
Redistillation.
Or exactly. Back to the drawing board.
Right.
The same as just because it comes out of a beer tap doesn't mean you should have three of them.
Right.
How many beers, craft beers, have you had that you said after three sips, that is enough of that?
Yeah, for sure. Some of the, I don't know, beers with cereal and milkshakes and donuts in them. I said, well, congratulations, you've done it, but yeah. I think I'm good on this.
And it's a shame that people have gotten this idea that, oh yeah, funky high ester Jamaican rums are what we want. Mm-hmm. The Jamaicans don't want that. Mm. They don't market them. They are typically sent to Europe as blending agents, and they're blended into other things, and they add wonderful flavors in small amounts. Mm-hmm. But
I don't know, Ed, this whole like decades old wooden pot filled with dead larvae seems uniquely appealing to me.
Like, oh, it does appeal.
Like a cover
nuts.
Of a Tool album.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing to me how we've all had roaches in our house. Typically, you turn on the light and the roach runs away. Not these roaches.
They charge you.
I was surprised when I took pictures, and I don't want to pick on any one distillery, but when I've taken pictures of distilleries where there's roaches climbing all over tanks and things.
Wow.
And I think, okay, well, how do you get rid of the roaches? If you start putting out traps, roaches are going to go in the traps, collect poison.
And spread, yeah.
And then they're going to spread that. Mm-hmm. Do you want that going into your fermentation tank? Mm. Nah, yeah. You really don't.
All jokes aside, most of the breweries that I've been to, definitely in this city and distilleries all over the country, are very sterile and very clean environments. It's absolutely what you want if you want to make a quality product.
If you want to make a quality product. Now, if you're making something that is going to be used for other purposes in very small amounts, you know, go for it. In hot dogs, I remember years ago, there was a government mandated allowable amount of rodent hair and rodent bone.
Oh, man.
And, you know, the FDA says, okay, we understand. You know, you can have a little bit of this in there. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, yeah, thanks. Thanks for that. You know, look at organic. You can have 95 or so percent organic and call it organic. Well, that other 5%, it might be stuff that you don't really want.
Yeah.
So, as an importer, I only go to places where they have real standards, and I want a repeatable product, and I don't want to have to worry about any kind of liability from untold things in the alcohol.
Yeah.
And it's important.
Yeah.
It's like you're a pride broker.
You know, I never thought of being a pride broker. I am proud of the products that I do, and I'm proud of the people that distill them, and that's why I'm so transparent. The first thing I ask people is, you know, can I tell people where this came from? And can I show pictures of it?
Yep.
And if they say yes, oh, great, we can do business. And if they say no, well, then nice knowing you, we can't do business. And then I've been to places that I just said, no, I'm sorry, this is unacceptable.
Yeah.
Yeah, transparency is like Very much appreciated.
So there's a new-ish article in Savoir Magazine, which is still on stands. I got it. I got a subscription for Christmas. And so it showed up at my house, and it's a beautiful magazine. They do a great job. And I was just, I don't know if there was anything on the cover that mentioned you, but I remember looking through the magazine, and there you were. And I jumped out of my chair, and I was like, babe, look at this. It's Ed Hamilton. He's in the new issue of Savoir. And so I kind of had to, you know, wait till the kids went to bed and kind of had to set it off to the kitchen table. I'm gonna have to come back to this and really dive in. It's a beautiful article. A lot of it centers on Martinique and the rums that you have imported from that area. And we touched on it a little bit in the shots episode, but what is it? We've talked about the Demerara rums, the Jamaican, the West Indies blend, but what is it about the Martinique rums that is so special and different from the other rums?
Well, unlike all of the other rums, those are made from sugarcane juice as opposed to molasses. Mm-hmm. Fresh sugarcane juice makes a difference. And then attention to detail, using the right yeast, monitoring the distillation. And that's what sets Nisson apart from the other rums on the island. La Favorite and Nisson both have a 3-day fermentation. And using a long fermentation and then paying attention to the freshness of the cane and then the distillation really makes a difference. I was very fortunate that Savoir contacted me and said, we want to do an article about you going to select barrels somewhere.
Yeah.
And it took almost a year to get the schedule together. And finally they said, hey, we've got to do this. So last June we went down. I didn't know that they were going to bring a photographer down, MB Kuth, who turned out we have a lot of mutual friends, and turned out to be just a lovely, great woman. And she made me look pretty good in the article.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's a beauty. It made me want to go down there.
It was pretty amazing. And I think they did a pretty good job of talking about other distilleries. They needed to paint a picture of me as this adversary to everybody else on the island or to the other importers, which isn't the case. Mm-hmm. I don't care what Ben Jones does or doesn't do. You know, he does his thing and I do mine, and yep, he imports rum and I import rum. I let the rum speak or taste for itself, and I'm very proud to be doing what I'm doing. That experience, I went down there with the idea of buying a few barrels, and I ended up buying almost 3 times what I expected. And there were a few things that I felt were kind of taken out of context.
As happens with a magazine article, I'm sure, right?
As happens.
Funny. Yeah.
Yeah, you spend 3 days with a guy, and four of us were riding around in a little Peugeot something, a little diesel Peugeot for 3 days. And so there's things on the record, off the record, on the record, off the record. And then, you know, you put things together. But I think Chris Cohen did a pretty good job of writing the article, and MB certainly took great pictures. Mm-hmm. It was a good experience. I did end up with a lot more rum than I expected I would. One of them was the Vu that we tasted during shots. Mm-hmm. I also have an organic from Nisson, and then I picked up a few barrels. It was interesting to see the writer's face as I was tasting the rums. We were doing this at 10 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. He wasn't used to drinking 100 proof rum at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Everything I tasted, I said, I knew this was going to happen. He's bringing out great rums. How can I say no?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I said, here, you taste these things. You tell me, which of these wouldn't you buy?
Yeah.
And then the photographer came over and she tasted them. She goes, oh, yeah, you got to.
They're all pretty good.
They're all pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, which one are you going to say no to? And it was a good experience. I enjoyed working with them, and I'm continuing to work with the photographer on some other projects.
Oh, cool. Well, it's a beautiful article. Definitely recommend you checking it out. Savoir Magazine on newsstands. And they only do now, I think, 6 to 8 issues a year. Used to be monthly, and now they've kind of scaled it back. But each edition, they put a lot into it now. And right. It's they did an ocean edition last summer, and it was just gorgeous. It was about all seafood around the world. And so, you know, shout out to them. They do a great job. And they really capture the romance of Martinique. And we talked a little bit about that. But is that just the tradition of making rum there and the agricultural tradition there? Is that what it is?
Well,
why is it so elegant? And is it the shorter fermentation times? Now, you mentioned that.
Well, they do also make, Martinique also makes a lot of rum from molasses. they don't talk about that. That goes to punches and it goes to cheaper rum in the stores, labeled as traditional. Mm. But Martinique started making agricole when the price of sugar dropped. Sugar beets in Europe really put a hurt on Caribbean sugar prices back in the 1880s. Mm-hmm. And there was a time that the production of sugar from sugar beets equaled the production of sugar from sugarcane. But because of transportation and the market being primarily Europe, or bigger market in Europe, the cost of sugar from the Caribbean really dropped. And people couldn't make money making molasses and making sugar, so they started just making alcohol. Alcohol sells.
Yeah.
It's usually consumed. And then you've got a more valuable product in a smaller space, so you can ship it. And then they started developing the aging, and over time that grew into what they call now rum agricole over the last 100 years. There's some people in Guadeloupe that were trying to make a blend of molasses rum and agricole rum, which doesn't make tremendous sense to me, but yeah, maybe for economics it made sense to somebody. But the island today is recognizing that agricole is part of their heritage, and they need to protect the sugarcane fields. This is bringing tourism, it's bringing dollars, it's bringing culture, it's preserving the culture. Let's not just plow under all the sugarcane fields and turn them into condominiums for tourists,
yeah,
which is a fantastic thing.
Yeah, that's great. Do you find, we talked a little bit about craft whiskey out here in this region, whiskey in general. Do you find, because what we've seen, I'd say the last 3 years or so, 3-4 years, the whiskey producers getting into finishing barrels with cognac barrels, and some people would call BS on that or just say they're just trying to put a new market, a new product into market, which is somewhat true. But do you find that the rums in the Caribbean, are they looking to some of those more experimental ways to finish rums? What are you finding when, because you're boots on the ground down there. What are you finding down there lately? Yeah,
people are looking at it. The biggest producers are doing it in very, very small production, like Bacardi. They've got a couple of different things, experimental things they're working on. But the smaller distilleries are looking for a way to differentiate themselves. And so they might do other things. Richard Seal in Barbados is doing a bunch of different cask finishes, but it's small production, it's expensive.
I imagine shipping in the islands, period, is
ridiculously expensive.
Yeah, like moving bottles, moving barrels, getting barrels, it's got to be a whole different ballgame than what like the American whiskey market faces.
Right, it is. Getting barrels down there in good condition from other places, and you pretty much have to buy a container load of anything. When I bring in rum now from for these products, I'm bringing in 20,000 liter tanks. And because of the economy of scale, if you don't bring it in larger volumes, your shipping costs are too high.
Yeah, that's tricky margins, especially in a place that's like prone to natural disaster as well.
Yeah,
like
hurricane strikes and all the other things that go into it. I am in a very, very unique position to have access to some great products. And
well, you're a cool guy. It's easy to get along with you, so I imagine you don't
face
too many of those.
Some people think so. Not everybody thinks that way. But
send the haters my way, bro.
But I'm really lucky that I work with a very good bottler. So all the Hamilton rums are bottled in upstate New York. And I'm working with a guy who's a chemical engineer. He understands quality control. His water comes from a well, never been part of a municipal water supply, so he doesn't have the challenges that you have getting rid of chlorine and fluorine and variables that your city water supply hits you with from time to time. Oh, we had a water main break. Now you're going to have a bunch of extra iron or extra color in your water for a few days.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, it's not a big deal if you're brushing your teeth, but if you're making whiskey, excess iron in your water is a problem.
Right.
So using well water. So I've been able to work with people that are kind of on the front edge of the quality control and being able to deliver. One of the challenges I see with most small companies is once they start to build the brand, they run out of product.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we've seen
common,
pretty common with plenty of brands across all spectrum.
Right. Yeah. And that's the number one thing that kills you.
Yeah.
And you guys quit putting it on your menus. You quit putting it on your bar. At the distributor side, they go, yeah, we'll wait till you get more. But and you just lose momentum.
Yeah.
I'm faced with that now. I've got a couple of products that I'm going to be out of for a month. A month isn't the end of the world.
Yeah.
But since 2015, I haven't run out.
In a busy place, it's long enough to be forgotten about.
You're gone.
Yeah.
You're gone. The older rums from Martinique, the Reserve, I'm going to run out of possibly later this summer. But I'm going to work through it. But the Hamilton rums, I've been able to maintain inventory. And I've been, I think, very lucky. But the other part of what I've been able to do, because I'm an engineer, and not that I'm a good working engineer, I'm a guy that can't keep a job. My boss years ago told me, yeah, you go find something else to do. You'd be a lot happier.
Were you surprised that possibly your background as an engineer helped you when you were working with this bottling?
These bottling
folks out of New York. So it came back around.
My life, being an engineer has saved my butt so many times. I mean, I literally got hired off a bar stool in Singapore when I was broke.
Yeah.
In 1980-81.
Sounds like a good song, man.
To run a boat that I had absolutely no business running.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did it and didn't wreck anything. But one of the other things that I looked at was failure analysis. And continually, I look at why have other brands failed? What's going to go wrong? How can I prevent problems from happening?
Mm-hmm.
And the failure analysis side says, don't run out.
Wow. Well, this has been great. We have,
yeah.
All right, the time Booze News with Kenneth Dedman.
News to, according to VinePair.com, Americans need to chill out on the sweets. Like, chill out on saying that they don't like sweet stuff. It's a common bartender thing. People just straight up tell you that they don't like sweet stuff, then order a Negroni, which is absolutely a sweet fucking cocktail. And if you get it from me, it's even sweeter because I'm going to sell you double 20 grams of sugar. A test market of like 200 people, 180 preferred a fruit forward, Zinfandel, blind tasting to a very dry, boozy Cabernet.
Mm.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
All right. We got 3 minutes left before we got to get out of here.
Okay. You got any more booze news?
Yes. We got to give a shout out to our friends at Don Chicho and in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah.
As they move into their new facility, they're doubling their size and quadrupling their production, going from 25,000 cases a year to 100,000.
Wow.
Yep.
They're trying not to run out like we talked about.
Moving out of the itty bitty space that they had in Manor Park to Ivy City. If you remember those guys when they started out, it was 300 liters a day.
Yeah.
They came and tasted us on it, on that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of iron, Ed, they make a really great Ferrocchina, which is a traditional Italian elixir to cure anemia.
Is that with fennel?
No. Okay. Ferro being iron, like the
grain?
The Greek word for iron. Uh-huh. They steep iron rods in brandy with citric acid, and that corrodes the iron and feeds their brandy. And booze news is over.
That's crazy.
Holy shit, that was fast.
We got it. Well, thank you so much for booze news. Quick hitting this week.
Whoa.
Getting ready. Yeah, that was great. Thank you, Mr. Kenneth Dedman. It's been great talking to you, Ed. Thank you so much for coming by.
Ed, you're cool as fuck, dude. Like, thanks for this is a real honor.
Rum
like,
runner,
having a
cheers.
Yeah, you're,
speaking of sweet, here's something sweet for you.
Okay, what do we got here?
This is a Martinique shrub, based on La Favre Blanc orange peel and the sugar that's in the not so simple syrup.
Whoa, this smells incredible, dude.
Oh wow, that's lovely.
This is another one that people came to me and said, "You got to do better."
What?
Wow.
Ed, this is amazing.
Sounds like that needs to be in a Mai Tai. Coming soon to a bar near you.
Dude, all your product is
coming soon.
Freaking great.
Yeah.
I can't wait till you guys open. I will come back.
Yeah, we've got about another week or so. And can't wait to have you back.
We got a couch
his,
for you.
His rums will be available here in Nashville. Thanks to Taylor from Best Brands for coming over here and,
hell yeah,
and
Taylor,
bringing all this
thanks
rum.
Thanks for lining this up, bro.
The Jamaican Pot Still Black, the Jamaican Pot Still Gold, the West Indies Blend. We're talking Neeson Organic.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of great rum coming to Nashville, and I do believe Nashville is about ready for it.
It's going to explode.
What do you think?
I hope so.
Well, this is the moment.
Let's do it.
This is the episode to remember.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm really lucky to work with Best Brands and be working with you guys. So continued success. I look forward to coming back.
Yeah, awesome. Thank
you
so much.
Thank you.
All right, we love your rums. Kenneth, love you, buddy.
Love you too, Mike.
All right, thanks to We Own This Town and Michael Eads.
Thank
you, Taylor. And find us again at @liquidgold_pod on Instagram, @choppertiki. I'm Mike Wolf for Kenneth Dedman. We will see you next time.
Hey, Ed, I got you a scratch off.